I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 437. We're not saying what this episode is free of, but it is.
Best
girl gaming tech gadget and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I am Pandalicious.
Welcome to another brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's good. I mean, that's good. Doing great is good. Actually, doing great is great.
Doing great is great. Doing okay is okay. And doing is meh.
Actually, if you're meh, it's bad and we should talk about it. Among all the other stuff that we're going to talk about this week, anime, maybe some gaming stuff, a little bit of gadget stuff, just all depends. I'm going to do my damnedest to not talk about Destiny, so there's that.
I think you should try really hard.
I'm going to try really hard.
Because
I'm going to fail, though.
Because I'm going to briefly, at the beginning of this show, talk about people who are dicks about leading people on, making us think something may happen and then not. Okay. I don't know if you know or not, but at some point last week, I'm going to say Wednesday for me, I had seen that they were saying that Silent Hills.
Oh,
now remember,
talked about the rumor that it
that freaking rumor. And like the minute I saw it, I knew in my heart of hearts, there's no way.
No.
There was no way it was going to be an Xbox One exclusive. But I had some people coming to me like, but Panda, what if it's true? I'm like, one, that'd be amazing. But two, I don't have an Xbox One. Why would it be? I don't have an Xbox One. And I don't know why they would switch consoles when the Silent Hill series has primarily been on PlayStation.
Because if it would be, basically, the reason why the rumor held any credit is because it would be the major fuck you to Konami, right? Because Konami is the one that had the exclusivity deal with Sony, not Kojima specifically directly. And so, since Kojima could work on a game like Silent Hills, but not Silent Hills, because he doesn't only write to that, Konami does. So that's the first piece that told me that it was bullshit. But if Kojima was to work on a title to make something completely to be a total FU to Konami, the best way to do that would be to release it on their major competitor, which in this case would be an Xbox One. And that's why a lot of people started biting real hard on the rumor. But Phil Spencer pretty much came out and said, I don't know where people are getting this idea or where they're getting their information from, but it's basically wrong.
It's wrong. I know. And like I said, when I first saw it, I was like, no.
All for the rumors, man.
I didn't. But I had friends who were like,
but you're pissed
like,
off about it. So
I am pissed off. I am irked about it because we can't just let, you know, a dead horse lie. Like, people still want to poke at it. We're not getting it, guys. Let's just, like, don't even bring it to my attention because it just angers me because it had so much potential. So, like,
but that doesn't mean that Kojima is completely out of making games. But probably what it means is that Del Toro's not jumping on to another game anytime too soon because this is, like, the second game that this has happened to him on.
Maybe he just has bad video game luck.
I think he just picks bad video games.
But people were just coming to me and like, oh, well, hope's not over. I'm like, no. No, just like in Catherine, love is dead. I died in the dream. It died in real life. Let it go.
Yeah, Silent Hills
is not happening.
Wait. Silent Hills, the Del Toro and Kojima game, is not happening. Konami is probably going to push out another Silent Hill.
Oh yeah, the franchise has done leaps and bounds of success for them, so I can't imagine them not. But for what we got treated to in PT is not what we're going to get.
Correct. And more than likely, if Konami does anything with the franchise, it's not going to be console-based, because they said that they're going to be focusing on mobile-based and tablet-based. So it's not going to be a console game, more than likely.
Right.
So it's really not going to necessarily be the Silent Hills that everyone has grown to love as far as the franchise goes. Because there's a bunch of things that you can't do on mobile that you can do on console. So there's also that wrinkle to throw in there.
Right.
But hey, there is good news, because E3 is getting closer and closer, and everyone is getting very excited about all kinds of rumors that are floating around the event. I'm trying very hard not to permeate any rumors and help them get stronger by fanning their flames or whatever. But if like two of the rumors that I've heard are true, I'll be a very happy girl. So I'm very, very excited for the media briefings, because I really need a couple of things to come to fruition. I want Beyond Good and Evil 2, damn it. I want it. I've waited long enough for it. So just give it to me. Damelo. Also, I need to know what is going on with Disney Infinity, and can I get the hookup on some Star Wars characters? I'm a little upset that I'm not going to be able to get a Boba Fett. I kind of rhymed. I didn't mean for that to happen. But
you're a poet and you didn't know it.
Truth. But there will not be a Boba Fett Disney Infinity character. So, kind of bummed about that. Because I think like a slightly chibi-fied Boba Fett would be adorable. And everybody on the planet would fucking want that figure. But it's not happening. So it'll be interesting to see what figures do happen. So I definitely want to see what's going on there. And hopefully Rock Band 4 is playable at E3. Like, those are kind of like my big guys. Just because I don't know necessarily what else to be looking for, you know, because I don't trust the rumors. So I'll believe in Battletoads when I see Battletoads, and not a moment before.
Hmm.
Right?
Like, right.
Everybody and their cousin's been wanting that for a long time.
Long, long, long time.
Especially our homeboy, the DCD. And I want to believe, you know, I want to believe, but until I can see it touch it and play it and be like, yeah, no, legit, it's for real. It's not for real. So there's that. Otherwise, you know, it's just kind of the excitement before the show of, like, so many things are going to get announced and so much is going to be hands-on this year. I'm pumped again for E3. Like, I'd fallen into a lull of the last couple of years. But I'm super pumped this year.
Well, and I had also seen, because I put it on my Facebook a couple of days ago, that E3 was planning to extend invites to the public, but at invite only, not, you know.
Yeah, there's going to be some public entrance to the show. I think a couple of things, you know, again, when you have a trade show like this, when you're looking for people to be very excited, especially like when you're broadcasting things, think of like the stuff going out on Twitch, right? If you're broadcasting a media event and the majority of the audience in there are journalists that are frankly covering something because they were
assigned
to cover it, not necessarily because they were interested in it. As different announcements are made and come through, they're not going to get rowdy and make a lot of noise and make a reaction that, you know, the speakers can react to. But what that translates to when you stream that is, oh, it's not a very exciting thing because the people in the audience didn't get excited. It's like going to a concert, right? If you go to see Shakira and she finishes a song and everyone's just like, oh, that's nice.
It's like, oh, is that going to be on a new album? Let me write that down.
Right. But if that's the reaction that you get, like, as the artist, you're like, oh, my God, like, I didn't do anything to, like, please these people because they're not rip-roariously excited. Well, the same thing translates. Like, when you think about media briefings, if you don't have people in the audience going, woo, yeah, like, that
translates. Yeah, savvy girl style 8.
okay, that translates to, wow, that wasn't really exciting. Wow, that wasn't really exciting. And so on the replays of that, then it continues to translate to, wow, that's not exciting. So you want to have a good mix of people who will be excited about your announcements, as well as cover them as thoroughly as you'd like them covered. And you want that same kind of mix for people visiting your booth. And unfortunately, you know, the majority of people going to E3 are in fact still in love and enthralled with the video game industry, but a big chunk of them are not. And so you've got to mitigate that somehow. And the best way to mitigate that is by allowing some public into your event. Because they'll be super excited, one, that they're getting access to all this stuff before anybody else is, and they'll bring that excitement to kind of balance that off. You know, because it's the thing that we've talked about before, and the dangers of limiting it to just credentialed media from known print publications and web publications versus having some community journalists like ourselves, plus those tried and true print publication journals to cover the event, to get that balance, you know. And I think the years that you've had a good mix of community and professional journalists have been the years that you've had way more coverage, and there's been a lot more excitement in the pieces that were covered than in the years where it's not. And I think that also translates into good media briefings, and seeing as how everyone is broadcasting their media briefings on pretty much every fucking channel you can imagine. Sony is going to be broadcasting their briefing into a bunch of theaters, so you can buy tickets, and I think right now just about damn near all of them, for as far as the cinema events places that are holding them. But you'd be able to go to a movie theater and watch the Sony media briefing.
Can you imagine that? Like, for real, though.
It's the truth. And, like, those tickets were going, like, crazy, like hotcakes. Because there's a lot of people who want the feel of being in the audience and being right there. And imagine it being in a big screen. If you can't be in L.A., if you can't be at the venue, man, oh, man, the next best thing, as opposed to trying to watch it on your teeny tiny TV at home.
Well, if you have a teeny tiny TV at home.
Well, if you're going to a theater, your TV is teeny tiny compared to the theater screen.
True. Okay.
To have the experience of being able to go to a movie theater, buy some concessions, so like get popcorn, nachos, soda, whatever, and in a room full of obvious video game enthusiasts now watch and share this experience. It's kind of like doing a Super Bowl party in Vegas, but for nerds. Like, I love the idea, you know, and Nintendo's done similar things with streaming their briefing in their Nintendo store in New York and things like that. But I just think the briefings are available now so many different places, you know, that you've got to have enthusiasm going on behind you. It can't just be cynical people in your feed. You know, just about everybody is going to be streaming stuff on YouTube and on Twitch. They're doing their own booth visits between Machinima and IGN and Twitch. Like, they're covering the show and doing their own digital coverage, which means you're constantly going to have video cameras in your booth and in around your booth. And man, if there's not anything interesting going on around your booth, it translates to, wow, there's not anything interesting going on around you. Like, everyone's going to want big, massive crowds and big, long lines around their booths and to play their games to show that, yeah, like, we've got the stuff. Look at how many people are willing to wait so long to get hands-on, to try, to play, like, that kind of stuff. You need that. So I'm excited for the show this year. I think it's anybody's show to, like, steal. I have a sneaking suspicion that Nintendo is once again going to surprise us, you know, with things like Splatoon and Amiibos, which we weren't really sure was going to, like, take off. And man,
no, we were definitely not sure about figurines being a dominant force in the market.
You know, and then I use it to play the game or not. Like, how does that work? And then, sure,
it's like,
enough,
do I place it on my gamepad Wii U thing, or do I shove it up my butt and whistle? Like, what? How does that work?
No. I don't think anybody had that question in particular.
I don't know. But anyway, I mean, it took surprising, like, it was just surprising to see how well it took off, I mean, people do like to collect things, so they definitely know their market.
Yep. I mean, the Wave 4 rule hit, and
people were losing their shit. People,
like, to get the Silver Mario, and I was just like, I'm really glad that I'm not in that right now. Like I said,
I don't have a single amiibo yet.
I have some really nice ones.
I know you do, and I like looking at yours, but
they're all characters that I really, really like from games that I really, really like, and I wanted those characters because I wanted those figures because of my affinity for them, not because I had any intention of using them in, like, Brawl or anything like that.
No, but I think there are just some people out there who just appreciate Nintendo and appreciate the characters just like you, who just would just want them.
Yes, and then there are others who hoard them in order to trade or sell for a tremendous markup. And in all honesty, I don't knock that unless you take it to an extreme. Like the story of the guy who bought up all the Rosalinas in the Target when they dropped because he wanted to corner the market on Rosalinas. So he bought all 100 that one Target got in a shipment. I was like, that's just a dick move. That's a dick move.
Wow, that's kind of, yeah, that's dicky.
Yeah, that's when you take it to the extreme. But if you buy, like, 5 because you're like, okay, one I'm going to keep to play, one I want to keep to
in
the box, and the other
Maybe I have a nephew or a niece.
Right. And the other 3 I'm going to sell to recoup all the money that I spent on these 5. Like, I'm fine with that. Do you, bro. Make more chica. Do you. But when you take it to that extreme, that's when I'm like, that's just a dick move, and I don't have any respect for it.
You know? I mean, like in my house, like my Biffle's got a interest in Mega Man. Not too bad, but like he's got a couple little trinkets here or there, but he got the Mega Man amiibo.
Yeah.
And like it's super cute, it's fine. And like every time that we go to a shop, he's like, Don't you want an amiibo? And I'm like, no. He's like, You don't even want a Yoshi? I'm like, no, I don't want. Now, if they had a blue Yoshi,
he would reconsider.
I would probably get a blue, because I love the blue Yoshi.
The only additional amiibo that I really wanted was the yarn Yoshi.
Yes.
But it is not to be. My budget was like, nope, no, and also no, and also you can't have it. But that's really the only other one that I want. Which, you know, is cool. I'm not knocking amiibos or anything like that. I'm just saying, Lord knows what Nintendo's going to come to the show with. You know, we know that the Legend of Zelda game has been pushed back, so not holding out a whole lot of hope that they'll be playable yet of that. But I don't know. Like, Nintendo could completely blow our minds and be like, hey, you thought we didn't have anything, but blammo, here's this
lineup,
and you want to play all of our games. So we'll see, you know.
Actually, you know how funny it would be if Konami went to Nintendo?
It wouldn't be, because they've already said that they're focusing on mobile games.
I know.
The only thing I could see is them doing some stuff for the 3DS, which we know is Nintendo's big bread and butter outside of Amiibo. But even that, I don't know that Konami at this point, because they've really done themselves a huge disservice. But they've done themselves a huge disservice. Like, there's not a lot of the game community left that has much respect for Konami.
No, not right now.
Because they really and truly have
screwed the pooch.
Yeah. Through how they've managed everything and the verbiage that they've used, they've basically put themselves before their community. And you don't recover from that. Like, community remembers. Okay, Silent Hills was a game that the community was really looking for.
Oh my god, the community is like the North from Game of Thrones. The North remembers.
Okay,
it's the true. North fucking remembers.
It's true. And so, like, right now, like, I don't have a lot of respect for Konami. Now, granted, I wasn't in any of their meetings with Kojima and his team, so I don't know what was said or how feelings went across tables, but at the end of the day, if you can't come to some kind of reconciliation for the good of your business, because that game was going to make Konami bank.
Yeah, hand over effing fist.
Okay, and it was going to reinstill a lot of, I think, goodwill. When you make a decision like that, that basically says, we can't come together for you guys, and we're not even going to pay attention to the financial good that it's going to do us, because that game was going to make them bank. And so if you can't come together over just the idea of the money that you're going to make for your franchise and probably the reigniting of a fan base. Because let's face it, like, survival horror, as you've mentioned before, Panda.
Countless times, in fact.
You know, has really kind of taken a backseat to FPS and MMORPG and MOBA for quite some time.
And not even that. It's just split amongst itself. Like, people are really just experimenting with the genre to see what new things they could add to it. Like I said, like, we've had this escapist horror, like, with Outlast, where you're not really able to fight back, and you're really at the mercy of whatever the encounter is. And, I mean, then you've got your standard survival horror, where you have your tactics that allow you to fight back against, you know, the evil that is impending itself on you. And then there have been people who have been taking horror to a whole new place. Like, there was a game that I heard about, and I can't remember its name, but the character that you play, I believe, because they're not really saying it, but I believe your character is blind. Mm-hmm. And the character is some type of journalist or something like that. And she hears all these rumors of this house in the area that she's in, and she goes to this house to try to figure stuff out. And, like, she has to hit things, because I'm assuming she has, like, the stick. And as you are hitting things, like, it gives you, like, the really bad Daredevil scenario. Like, as soon as he taps something, like, it presents, like, a brief glimpse of, like, a scene. So the more you're walking, you could see, oh, there's nothing in front of me. There's nothing in front of me. But then all of a sudden, if you're not tapping something, I think in the trailer or whatever, an entity does make itself known to you, like a presence, even though you can't physically see it. Mm-hmm. So, like, they're playing around with what is scary. And the idea of having vision, in the case of this particular demo thing I saw, having vision and then having it taken away permanently and having to now adjust to this whole new dark world, like, that is actually very terrifying. Like, it's, you know what I mean? I think I played another game that played on horror a little bit, Among the Sleep, where you were a baby going through your house at night, and that was terrifying, and I'm a grown-ass adult. Like, so survival horror has been taking very interesting, bold leaps in different directions to find, you know, new ways for us, because, like you said, there aren't that many options out there for us currently right now, because it's not a primary focus of any of the big three, really. And, I mean, you can't blame them. You know, you go where the money is. If you want to stay in business, you got to give what the people like. And there's a lot more people who just want to bang, bang, and pew, pew, and stab you in the face than people who want a, you know, single adventure for just you and your house at night.
Right.
So, and don't get me wrong, I love to pew, pew, and stab people in the face.
Yep.
Like, but sometimes I want to have a little time by myself, where I can be scared.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And, you know, Silent Hills definitely was going to do that. So,
well, I mean, no, like I said, it was going to do all that.
So it was.
It was going to do that. It absolutely was. But in the wake of all of that, but, you know, because this is a great segue. Thank God we brought this back up. There is a game coming out that's in development right now. It's aiming to come out in 2016, so it's a bit ways away from, you know, our hands. But if you are a PC fan and clearly were madly in love with what was going to happen from the PT trailer, then I would suggest that you look up and keep an eye on a game called Allison Road. People are saying, and this is air quotes here, they feel like it is a spiritual successor to PT, which is kind of funny since the actual game never came out, so it's kind of hard to say that. And they are basing it off of the playable trailer, the playable teaser. I went and saw the trailer for it and a little bit of gameplay that the developer, like, left out for people to look at. And, I mean, the guy who was behind Allison Road grew up with Silent Hill, and he doesn't understand how people are making that connection, but he's completely honored by it. And, I mean, from the things that they're showing in the trailer, you can definitely see that he probably got inspired to start doing Allison Road after they released the news of, you know, Silent Hills, because it does have that very realistic-looking hallway-ish thing going on. Though I know the game does have its variants, like even though you are in a first-person character and you are kind of in a house, you do have the whole house to explore in this game, and it's not necessarily going to loop and try to make you go insane very much like PT is aiming to do, but it does have a similar feel. Like, I did get some tinges only because there is some resemblance in how it appears and how the developer is building on that atmosphere in the right direction. But granted, he's not Guillermo del Toro. So, you know, it doesn't have that same polish. But still, like, it might be something that may not excuse the fact that PT will never actually exist in our reality, but it will be the closest thing to it for us. And I think horror fans who are PC bound, and I'd love to see this get ported somewhere else in the future after its initial release, because I'm not a PC person, but I would take a crack at this. I would say, you know, keep an eye out on this. This might be something to give you a little squeeze of comfort in the time of our mourning.
Well, there you have it.
So
the only other thing that I have to talk about E3 related, because we're going to do our big E3 show shortly.
Yep.
Before we head out to LA.
The clock is ticking.
It is. It is like tick tock, tick tock. You better start thinking about packing. And I'm like, packing. I don't think I unpacked from last year's E3.
You probably didn't.
I didn't. Not completely.
Well, there you go.
So I might open up and be like, oh my God, even more swag. Because sometimes I forget about swag. Sometimes. Not all the times. But I need some Kingdom Hearts 3. I need some. Okay, I need.
I want that to come out. I want the next The World Ends With You to come out. I would love
for. And that could be a big one for Nintendo.
It could be.
For sure. For sure. So with that, let's talk a little bit about anime.
Okay, great.
Because I've been watching some. I know you've been watching some.
I've been watching one super marathon style. Which I feel like if you've got the time, like if you have a standard enough job that you have several hours that you actually don't have, like, kids to take to, like, lacrosse practice or a second job or school, and you enjoy anime, then you should be watching things in like, freaking mass bulk. Go to the BJ's of anime and just stock up on anime.
Well,
just do it.
I started watching one that you actually mentioned on a previous podcast that sounded similar to a series that I was talking about. I have been watching Assassination Classroom on Funimation, and I have to say I'm addicted to it.
I saw a trailer for it, or like a little mini commercial between episodes of the anime I'm going to talk about. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I got to watch that next.
Yeah, you do. You do. So I won't give it all completely away, but basically what has happened is it's like Bad News Bears, but with a kind of twisted purpose.
Okay.
So there's a class at this school, and I can't say the school name. I'm just going to mess it up, but it's Kunugigaoka Junior High.
Okay.
Junior High. So Kunigigao.
Why don't you just call it Kuni High School.
I'm just going to call it Giga, all right?
Giga High School.
In the middle, yeah. Giga Junior High. It's Junior High. So I got to stress this. This is a Junior High.
Okay.
These are younger kids in this classroom, class 3E, which is basically the lowest of the low. So if your grades slip so bad that you're basically a delinquent and there's like no hope for you, you get sent to this class.
Okay.
Basically. Because they don't expel you unless you do something like really badly violent. However,
normally
that wouldn't be a big deal. Like every school set up that you have a lower pleasure and then you have your AP kind of placement classes, right?
Yes.
Well, you throw into the mix that there's this creature who, like, destroyed, like, most of the moon. Like, 70% of the moon. So it's, like, permanently in its crescent shape above the Earth. And has then come to Earth and told all the people at Earth of, like, hey, as far as, like, the military and governments go, I'm gonna do the same thing to your planet in a year.
Oh.
And here's the deal, though. I'm going to give you a shot at actually taking me out before I do it. But the shot is only going to be able to be taken by the students in this class that you're going to have to let me teach.
Wait, what?
Yep, so he strikes a deal with the government. Like, all right, so I'm going to, and you can put all these kids, they're going to be assassins, okay? They got to try to kill me. And if they can kill me, then great. The Earth survives. It's all good. But I get to teach them for a year.
No, wait, is this demon thing creature teaching them how to be assassins?
Didn't say it was a demon. But it's a balance of target and assassin and student and teacher. Like, he teaches them legit sciences and math and also skills to help them be adapt. So I'm going to teach you everything you need to kill me, but you guys are going to have to work as a team to pull it off. It's not going to be just a simple walk-up mission and stuff like that.
That's really kind of funny that he would put in motion take him out.
Take him out. Now, we haven't got his entire backstory, but there's a flashback where there was a woman who basically was like, I know that you have the ability to teach them to be good assassins and to live and not die, so you need to do this. So that's kind of the impetus of him being your way out is, I'm going to teach these kids, I'm going to teach them how to kill me, and they might be able to kill me, and then the Earth is fine. So they have this year. So the classroom is made up of all of your archetype students. So you have your very, very quiet, but super, super brainy, wears glasses, purple haired, so very, very...
But why would a brainy person be in the lowest class?
Because she's good with math and sciences, but when it comes to the social graces and the...
Oh.
She sucks at those.
So okay.
She can never answer questions when called upon in class. And she was horrible when called to the board. And so she did well in the math and sciences, but not the other stuff. And school is made up of all things, not just math and sciences.
That's true.
She ended up in
the classy.
You have a couple of big talkers. They transfer in students every so often that have different abilities, including one who basically is a psychopath and has been an assassin for a while and comes in and just thinks that he's going to walk all over the teacher, who they end up naming Koro Sensei, which is a play on Koro Senai, which means unkillable.
Okay.
Because he can move at Mach 20. So that makes it a little difficult.
Right, yes. I can see how the average person may not be able to...
Correct. So it's not going to be like a one-person direct. So basically the main protagonist, because it's a classroom full of students, at the point that I'm at now, there's 27 assassins in the class. But the main one that is basically the protagonist is this character named Nagisa. Who everyone in the class thinks is a girl, but is actually, in fact, a boy. And says that he's a boy and hangs out with the dudes all the time. But nobody really thinks that he's a boy until they have a class trip where they go to a swimming hole. And he gets in his swim trunks and everyone's like, oh my god, you are a dude! He's like, I've been telling you guys this entire time.
Of course.
But he's, like, really, really cute in the face and sweet. Like, looks very girlish. Basically has, like, little pigtails. With blue hair, even though, again, totally a dude, which is interesting. But he's basically taking notes and provides the narrative in between things going on with Kuro-sensei and the students. Because Kuro-sensei is dedicated to being a teacher. Like, there's a point where they bring in a femme fatale teacher to try and, like, kill him, and he's totally onto it. But the other teacher at the school, who basically is the representative of the military, brings her over while Kuro-sensei is, like, making tests in the woods, drinking lemonade, and she's like, I don't understand, he moves at Mach 20, why does it take him so long to make these tests? And the guy's like, because he makes every test individual for every student. He focuses on what their weaknesses are and the areas that they need to grow and what they're struggling with and makes the test around that to force them to get better. So it's not the same cookie cutter test for everyone. Also, it makes it so that no one can cheat off of anybody else for the test because everyone's test for
every subject
is different. Ugh. Oh. And I was like, but it's so sweet. So it's a very interesting thing where you've got this line, and Nagisa even comes up with it. He's like, there are things that Kuro-sensei does, because in his agreement, he cannot harm the students. The students can take him out, but he can't retaliate or attack
anything. Well, because he could just take them all out, bam. Correct. And be done.
But he doesn't that's not his motive. That's not his whole point. So he's like, yeah, of course, I won't do that. And there are actually situations that pop up that he ends up protecting the students and the kids at his own, the cost of his own safety, to the point where he almost gets wiped out this one time because he's trying to save the kids and is focused more on that than anything else. So it's this very interesting thing because you have these moments where these kids flip and go into killer attack assassin mode, and you see it and it gets kind of dark that they're trying to pull off these things. And then it flips to these more, like, sweet, lighthearted coming-of-age things where they're trying to, you know, learn that trying to emulate their idol isn't the thing, but to figure out their own path and their own way of doing something is the thing. And they're being taught this by this gelatinous life form because he basically has, like, a smiley, happy, yellow face.
Okay.
And the rest of his body is basically tentacles because he's always in a professor's robe, so you can't really see his body, so you just assume it's tentacles pretty much from the neck down. We don't really know. But most weapons can't harm him, like lead bullets and things like that don't harm him. There is a special material that does, that basically is not harmful to humans, but will completely, like, obliterate him on contact, that the students have all their weapons made out of. Their BB guns, their knives, all this kind of stuff. And, of course, none of them can land a hit on him, though they try really hard. And so it's just this really interesting mix of, like, lighthearted coming of age with dark assassination, doomsday thrown in, and, oh, by the way, it's all taking place in this junior high. And so Nagisa is really interesting because your introduction to Nagisa is he's one of the first damn near successful assassination attacks on Kuro-sensei. A couple of the other guys who have been picking on Nagisa basically up until this point in the 3E class convince him that, you know, he's not really worth anything. Nobody has any time for him. Nobody really cares for him. So, you know, he might as well go ahead and become a suicide bomber and be able to take this guy out. Because the government, I forgot to mention, has created a bounty so that whoever is able to kill Kuro-sensei will get 10 billion yen or $100 million. So there's also that. There's not just saving the earth, but you'll also be redonkulously rich if you pull it off.
Kind of sounds like a mix of Battle Royale and, like, Eden of the East, Battle Royale, and a little bit of Danganronpa.
Yeah, just a little bit. That's basically what's going on.
It's, like, mix it all in a bowl, bake it at 375.
Sure, talking about Danganronpa, that's when it has popped up.
Danganronpa is freaking balls to the wall insane.
It is, and I love it, and I need another season of it. But until then, Assassination Classroom is a really, really good filler and to get me to that point. It's super cute. It's really dark at points. And there's a lot of action that's going on, but there's also a bunch of life lessons that happen in it as well. And it's animated really well. The opening, I think you would absolutely love. It's right up your alley, Panda. So, yeah, if you haven't had a chance to yet, I definitely recommend checking out Assassination Classroom. I know it's on Hulu Plus and it's on Funimation right now. I don't think it's on Crunchyroll yet, but that doesn't mean that it won't be. But you should totally check it out. It's
all
right. Absolutely.
Like I said, it was on my list. Currently, right now, since we're on the vein in the vein of anime, yes, and I haven't played anything new per se, because I'm trying very hard to not talk about
the thing that we said
we're gonna try very hard not to talk about.
So far, I haven't.
Yeah, I know. I'm very surprised. So, on my end, anime-wise, like I said, I watch generally things that I've been watching that are simulcasting, but I took the chance and I did watch all of Death Parade. I marathoned that like a boss. Once again, I have to eat crow because you're absolutely right. It was completely up my alley in terms of a genre. I would love to see more come out of that, and I feel like the way that the series ended, they could open that up a little bit. I kind of hope that they do.
Oh, it's not about eating crow. It's just about being...
Being right. Being, you are right. As I was watching the first few episodes, I was like, man, I was so on point the other week when I was just kind of trying to get a feel for it. I'm like, oh, I was so right about, oh, but now, but, and then after I saw it, I was like, oh, but here's where my issue is. I'm like, this is what I, and there's no way for me to have perceived it in just the few bits I had seen, like, in snippets and, like, shots and stuff. So I'm pretty proud of my anime skills for where they are. But I had mentioned in some other podcast about a series kind of being a mixture of Tokyo Ghoul and something else. And I think you had talked about it, like, oh, the Triage X series, I think you had mentioned. Yeah. And I was like, you know, I'm like, for me to go and talk about Tokyo Ghoul when I haven't really even finished it, I really should, you know, eat my words. So I went back and I marathoned the whole first season of Tokyo Ghoul. And on Hulu Plus, they actually also have the second season, which is Tokyo Ghoul square root of A, I think is the symbol they're using. And I don't actually know what the, you know, what it's actually like the full name of it is. But I went and rewatched all of Tokyo Ghoul and I found more things more interesting the second time around. And obviously the way that Tokyo Ghoul, the first season ends, you clearly know that more has to be going on, right? Which is, so you clearly knew a second season was coming, and I'm only halfway through the second season right now, but I like all the feels are happening in this season, because I mean, you are dealing with primarily in the series, if you don't know, you've got humans and you have ghouls, and ghouls are essentially zombies, except they're kind of living and not dead.
Yeah, so they're more living.
They are living entities that have to consume human flesh in order, or humans, period, to live, because they can no longer eat human food because human food tastes like the most disgusting thing. Like, it all tastes rotten to them.
Except for coffee.
And I mean,
so in all things, coffee.
Coffee prevails. So if you got a friend who really likes coffee and you never see them eat, probably a ghoul, but anyway, and so yeah, I'll just give you a synopsis for people who don't know. So the protagonist is this 19-year-old kid named Ken Kanaki, and he's, you know, kind of quiet and to himself because, you know, he's kind of got the worst half of a Batman. Both of his parents are dead, and I mean, like, he seems to be like
the worst half of a Batman. That's pretty much a Batman.
Well, no, because your parents are dead. But no, it's the worst half of the Batman, because, okay, so Bruce Wayne has no parents, but he's filthy fucking rich, and then he becomes, like, super successful.
Well, you didn't, like, say that.
That's the other half of the Batman.
But you didn't.
The worst half is having no parents. The better half is having so much money you don't know what to do with it.
Right, but you didn't say that. So I'm like,
I said the worst half of the Batman. You clearly know.
No, I did not.
I don't think having a lot of money, having shit tons of money, is a bad thing. That cannot be the negative half of being of a Batman.
Panda, what I'm saying
as Batman is, as a noun.
Define what the other half is. The other half of the Batman could be anything. It could be you have an Alfred and not two. Like, the other half of the Batman could.
That's not horrible. That's just you're not managing your money. So you could get two Alfreds with the money that Bruce Wayne has. Anyway, all right. Well, the worst half of the Batman is having no parents and them dying at an early age for you. And Ken Kanaki has, you know, his father died when he was pretty much really, really young. And his mother died while he was, like, in middle school. And, I mean, for having such a horrible, tragic backstory, Ken seems to be very, very nice. Like, everyone's just like, he's kind of a nice guy. Like, he's kind of quiet, reserved. He likes his books. Like, he's got a whole lot of books. And he's got this one name, one friend named Hide, that he calls him. Hideyoshi, I think, is his full name. And, like, he's kind of outgoing, and he's always kind of watching Ken's back. And for a while there, I thought there might be some romantic tension a little bit. Because Hide seems to be a little too concerned, but he's just that really good friend who's going to annoy you until you sort your shit out.
Because he realizes that, you know,
Ken's all alone because he's got the worst half of a Batman. But anyway, so they're at college because, like, for once, we don't have kids who are, like, in high school. Like, these kids are in college, like, 19, 20 years old. And one night, he's out with Hide, and, like, they see some girls. And Hide's just like, oh, yeah, well, you should totally talk to that girl because she's, like, kind of cute. And, like, she reads book, and I think she's totally reading a book that I've seen you read. And he's all like, you're right. She is reading that. So it makes him confident enough to approach her. And she's all, like, quiet and demure and has glasses. And her hair's kind of fuchsia. Back off. But, hey, whatever. They spike up a conversation. And she's like, oh, we should go out sometime. And he's like, that would be wonderful. And they meet up at a coffee shop. And they're talking about this book. And it seems like the date is going surprisingly well. And, I mean, Ken seems very optimistic. I think her name is Rise. Rise Kamiyoshi or something like that, or Kamishimi. And she's just, she seems very, very nice, well-spoken, well-mannered. And, like, in the background of this coffee shop, there's a TV going and talk about all these brutal attacks that are happening, like, in the area of this place. And she's, you know, and she's like, well, you know, this was a nice date, but I should probably be going home. And he's like, well, I'd love to do it again. And she's like, well, we do have a lot of things in common, so I wouldn't be against it. She's like, however, you know, I kind of live near the area where all this stuff is kind of happening. And, like, I get a little creeped out and I'm a little nervous. And if you could, like, walk me part of the way, if not all the way, that'd be, like, really wonderful. So, of course, Ken, being the nice guy, is like, sure, no problem. And, like, they're walking through this area, and you can see that there are other people on the street, so it doesn't seem all that bad until all of a sudden there's this dark, dark, like, walkway. And she's like, my apartment complex is right down this street. So as they're walking, you know, the hairs on the back of my neck went up because I'm like, something bad's going to happen. Something really bad's going to happen. Shit went down. And you think for a minute, like, she's going to, like, sit there and kiss him. Like, she's all up in his ear. And all of a sudden, her eyes just turn red and she just bites. And, like, just bites a chunk out of him and kind of reveals herself to be this ghoul. And you actually turn, if you were listening to the background stuff, you had heard that there was this binge ghoul going around eating a lot of people, like, aggressively going after humans and consuming them. And, like, you see for a while that she's, like, really into the hunt of eating. It's not even about, like, the quick quill to eat to survive. Like, she has...
enjoys the hunt.
She enjoys the torture leading up to the kill. Like, all of it just does it for her in a really pervy, sexual kind of way. And, like, you as soon as all this is going down, you're kind of like, damn, Ken, you're kind of screwed, bro. Like, unless someone comes to your help, which I can't expect would happen, you are fucked. But as luck would have it, and I'm using air quotes here, something happens that causes Rise to get fatally hurt and or dead. And Ken is on the brink of life or death at this point, and then it goes through a series of flashes, and you can tell that a surgery is happening. And you can hear some bits of conversation, but not all of it, but the gist of it is they implant the organs of hers that were not destroyed in the accident into him. And he wakes up in his house, you know, and is kind of surprised to be there, and he can't really remember what happened, but his TV is on, and they're talking about this horrible accident that happened nearby that coffee shop that he had been at previously. And they're talking about, you know, how you can tell ghouls apart from humans, and he starts having all these weird notions about it, and he starts taking things out of, like, his cabinets and stuff to try to eat them, and he can't. They make him sick to his stomach, and he starts throwing up. And he realizes that something has been done to him. And that's just the whole first episode. So the whole series really kind of centers around him having to battle, because he's not full ghoul, he's only half ghoul. So he still has the humanity inside of him, that moral compass that's like, no, I can't consume humans just so I can survive. But then he has to fight with the fact that he's pretty much got Rise in his mind, always battling that humanity down, like, well, you're going to get really hungry soon. And, you know, you could just accept me and, like, we could just be this thing. And, like, and her voice is usually the most calming thing in the world. So, like, she's trying everything in her power of being, you know, in his body to try to corrupt him into, you know, the life of Ghoulhood. Right. And so he's battling himself, essentially, throughout the whole series. And for a while there, those first six episodes, when he was like, I can't do that. I can't eat this. And I'm like, shut up, Canon. Fucking deal.
I'm like, really? At this point?
Like he was such, he was like, such a whiny cry. I'm like, you're alive. Okay, great. I'm like, yeah, you kind of have to eat people. Yeah, that's not the best thing.
You get to a point where he becomes part of an organization that basically sources what you need and only what you need in a quite humane way and prepares it in a quite humane way. So it's not like you're like having to gouge someone's neck. Like they're prepared a steak and a burger. I'm using air quotes that are basically people. So like if you just turned your brain off for a hot second and ate the fucking burger,
like,
you'd be happy.
You don't even have to prepare it. You could have somebody else prepare it. You could even like have them bring actual meat. And, like, cook both. And then you would never know, like, firing squad style. But, like, for the first half of the series, he's a crybaby who can't really do anything. And he gets taken in by these ghouls who are, like you said, very humane about everything. Like, they run this coffee shop. They have lives outside of, you know, the fact that they have to feed. And it's very managed. They are highly managed and highly efficient. They don't go out of the bounds of the rules that they have set. They've got things in place for when people decide to fuck up, because people do, you know, just people fuck up. And, you know, like it could have been an easier transition instead of like having to do it all alone, which in his mind, that's what he was doing. He's conflicting all this stuff on his own. But by the end of this first season, you find out that there's this one ghoul who's like pretty powerful and pretty fucked up, and he has been looking for Rise, or so you think. And these people come from a different ward because they have different parts of Tokyo that are like sectioned off in numbers, and like these ghouls come from like a different one. I think they would come from like 13 or something, and they're in 20th when they come over because they know that Rise left the previous ward to go to this one, and Rise was the reason that there were all these unsolicited attacks, because she was binge eating on people and not really adhering to the rules. And, you know, like I said, people fuck up, and that's what happens when you fuck up. You get
consequences.
You get murdered. Anyway, but they were looking for her, this particular group, because one, she abandoned what they were doing, and she was a pretty powerful ghoul there. And she has, they all have certain abilities. Like, some can move a lot faster. Some have multiple ability type things that look like multiple tentacles and stuff. Like, they all have certain ranged abilities and stuff, which is kind of cool. And Rise not only had, like, four of these different things growing out of her, but she also could regen amazingly fast. Mm-hmm. Like, abnormally fast for anybody else. And there was a ghoul who had gotten caught and was put in ghoul prison, which is no joke, by the way.
Ghoul prison is like, makes federal prison look like day camp.
Like a walk in the park. But anyway, while this ghoul who's going by Jason in the first season, manages to get out, but while he was in there, he had been horribly tortured by these inspectors, which are pretty much like the CIA or the FBI. And they're kind of twisted, though, because they use these weapons that are actually made from these weird tentacly things from ghouls. So they're using ghoul tech to take out ghouls. And we've seen that plot point a million times over in anime series, so that's nothing new. But this inspector, who they never really talk about who he was, but he would torture the fuck out of this guy who becomes Jason, because he wears a Jason mask and stuff, by literally like cutting off his feet and his arms. Hands technically. Yeah. While he was doing it, he would make this guy count backwards from 1,000, minusing 7 each time. And it drove this man nuts, and it drove him to the point where now he also enjoys torture to the highest degree. And so he plots to kill Ken Rise because of this regen ability. And the thing is, if you're a ghoul and you happen to indulge in cannibalism, you can sometimes absorb that ghoul's abilities. Also, if you eat too many ghouls, you go batshit nuts, and then you can no longer control your ghouldom. Which they explore in the second season, which I liked a lot. But at the end of the season, the first season, Ken is abducted by this guy, and he is literally tortured the fuck out of, like, completely. Like, every 15 minutes, he is getting his feet and his hands cut off. And he is made to count backwards to stay sane enough. And I think it's because the Jason guy really kind of wanted to hear Ken beg for his death. Like, he enjoyed severing all that hope and you know, all that resilience that humans and some ghouls have. And he would only devour him once he had become that helpless. So anyway, while he's being tortured, the Rise part of him, who he's been fighting pretty well at this point, off, is just, you've lived this life so passively, you know, and I don't understand why, you know, this is the type of world where you kill or you be killed, you know, and I mean, do you feel like you've lived a fulfilled life? Like, is that it? Like, what was your mother like? And then that opens up a whole big can of worms, because you actually find out that, you know, his mother, who he is deemed to be like this beautiful saint of a woman, which honestly, she was. Very kind, too kind, in fact. And like, as she's peeling these layers back of his memories, you know, she finds that one little cord of him that, you know, he had wished that his mother would have put so much effort in providing care for him than everybody else and herself, because she worked herself to death, essentially. She overworked herself. And the minute that he accepted that, yes, he had wished his mother was still alive and had decided that he was more valued than her money-grubbing sister and everything else. He decides at that point that he's going to take in Rise and actually be better than she was. And at this point, his hair's gone completely white. I can't tell if he fully accepted the ghouldom or what. Because
he embraces
it. So, and he dons on his really awesome mask, which I didn't really talk about because I really think people should watch the series. And in the second season, we're dealing with a lot of inter-ghoul stuff. Like, the outside stuff isn't really happening. There's a lot of power struggles that are happening right now. Ken leaves the coffee shop where all the friendly, you know, structured ghouls are all at. To go work with this group who's kind of an activist ghoul group who's kind of, their mission is to free ghouls and to make ghouls like the ruling class of the earth and take Tokyo over. And like, and they're pretty powerful ghouls too on top of that. So like, they're no joke. They're like double S or triple S rated ghouls. And while we're going through all that, there's all this talk of this one-eyed owl who's like this triple S fucking ghoul who no one can fuck with because he's like so fucking badass. It's unbelievable. And, you know, you find out, and I'm not going to spoil too much, that the one-eyed owl was actually involved in something very taboo. And that taboo thing is kind of coming around to try to bite him in the ass, so to speak. And that's where I'm going to leave off with that because I haven't finished it, so I'm not sure how, I'm not exactly sure how it resolves yet.
I do, but I won't.
Please don't. But I love the build up because they've already given you everything that you need to piece this together by this point. But they are so careful about how much information they're giving to us to ingest visually. That unless you are like, I need to know more about this, or unless you have these invoking questions, then, I mean, you're just going to enjoy the series. But if you are ingesting it the right way and you're asking all the right questions, then you can already kind of assume where it's going. And, like, I love series that do this. Because, I mean, yeah, I love to watch stuff. And, yeah, sometimes I can mindlessly put something on while I'm cooking dinner or reading something else or playing My Singing Monsters on my phone. But I love a series that can actually keep me so engaged that I won't touch anything else until the series is over. And Death Parade did that for me, and this did it for me. So, I mean, if you're really looking for some series that can really kind of grab you and fully commit you to them, then these are two series that you should definitely watch.
Boom! Anime! All ready for you! Recommendations! Ugh! Yeah, I'm with Panda on the Tokyo ghoul. It's amazing.
I do want to ask this, and I hope you could just give me a yes or no. Is the ending of the second season, do they make it so that it could potentially have a third?
Yes.
Okay, great. That's all I want to know! All I want to know.
Potentially, there could be a third season.
All right, great. Great.
That makes And I really want them to have a third season. I kind of need it for my soul. There's that. So there you have it. Assassination Classroom, Tokyo Ghoul, totally worth a watching. I mean, I'd watch it. I did watch it. I recommend you watch it. So does Panda. So with that, it's time for us to start wrapping up the show.
Wrapping it up.
Just about time to go. And see, I've gone the whole show, guys. I mean, I could go into it.
No!
I'm not going to. I'm just going to wrap up the show and remind you to check out all the stuff we write on our website, www.egmnow.com/electricsisterhood. That's where you'll find all of our AAA stuff, as well as other editorial pieces that we're writing. You'll find all of our indie reviews, our podcasts, our live event coverage, and more at our home. That's always been our home, www.electricsisterhood.com. You can grab our podcast in a bunch of different places. You can find it on Stitcher Radio. You can find it on our website. You can find it on VogNetwork.com, and you can find it in iTunes by going to the iTunes application and searching for us either on your desktop application or on the podcast application on your mobile device and finding the Eshcast and subscribing. You'll want to do that because you'll get our podcast the moment we put them out upon the interwebs. And if you like what we do, then you want to make sure that you check out the rest of the squad because we roll deep. If you like things that are indie, whether it's music, J-pop, K-pop, rock, all that kind of stuff, movies, theater, entertainment, manga, comics, you name it, KBD is on it. Check out No Borders, No Race at b3crew.com. I can't recommend KBD stuff more. Love what he does. You'll love it too. And you might even learn a little Japanese during that podcast. So make sure that you check out No Borders, No Race. And on Wednesdays, if you need beats for your feet, you're doing workouts, you're into the trap life, then you're into Geek Aggro at geekaggro.com. Beats put together by a homeboy Deuce as well on the regular. So make sure that you check them out. And on Thursdays, if you've got issues,
he's got issues.
Y'all can have issues
together.
The Issues Guy Issues Program, call in live TV recap wrap up shows. You're into Walking Dead? So is The Issues Guy. You're into Game of Thrones? Thrones. So is he. So make sure that you call in, be part of the show, be part of the recap. It's absolutely amazing. Coming to the family this July, the Structure Network. Oh, it's going on. It's going on.
Yay.
So stay tuned, because when we talk about really increasing nerddom, we're talking about comics. We're talking about more show coverage, things like Comic-Con, just a crazy amount of things that are going to get covered.
Crazy.
Concerts. Video games, live streaming, it's going down. The grid is about to be live, people. So make sure that you're keeping up with us on our social channels, on our Facebook page at facebook.com/landofesh, or on Twitter at ESH News to find out when the squad comes and runs deep and when we are full-fledged, full family. So with that, it's the time on the podcast where I turn to my sister and say, yo, sis.
Hey.
What shit you digging this week?
Double stuffed Oreos.
Yeah, they're good. They're pretty good.
Them with coffee. Hot coffee. You just dip them in. They get all melty in your mouth. And they're so good.
Okay, so there's that.
And what shit are you digging this
week? Mortal Kombat X. I'm addicted.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's tight. It reminds me of Mortal Kombat 3, which is probably one of my favorite Mortal Kombats in the entire franchise. It's just so melty. So I'm on that X. That Mortal Kombat X. So as always, I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next time, guys.
Peace.
Let's go to the peace.